right, this is Gary Parrish again from CBSSports.com. It's now Monday, February 23rd, and this is the Ion College Basketball Podcast. I'm joined, as usual on this Monday, by my buddies Matt Norlander and Sam Bassini. I suppose we should start with the big news from Sunday, specifically that Chris Jones has been dismissed from the Louisville basketball team, seemingly for good this time. So the timeline, if you've gotten confused, and I understand how you could easily get confused, the timeline works like this. Last Tuesday, he was suspended indefinitely. Then on Wednesday, he missed Louisville's loss at Syracuse. And after that loss, Rick Pitino went in on him, said he didn't know if Chris would ever be back and that he might ought to just go ahead and go to Belgium. And then on Thursday, of course, Chris Jones was reinstated to the Louisville basketball team. On Saturday, he played in a win over Miami, scored 17 points. And then on Sunday afternoon, he was dismissed by Rick Pitino for an unspecified violation of whatever. So it's a pretty wild six-day stretch, huh, Matt Norlander?
Yeah, this is now the second straight podcast where we started with Chris Jones, and we were joking to a certain degree on Friday after he had been reinstated after one game that all had been calmed and was well. You know, you got to think that whatever he did, it was, you know, this actually is similar to how Rashid Suleiman was dismissed from Duke earlier this season, in that it came right after a game. We don't know what happened, but clearly the timing of it suggests that Chris Jones had just an absolute zero tolerance policy over his head. And whatever he did to violate that, Rick Pitino immediately made the move. And I always say the shorter the press release, the worse it is. And Louisville's press release was 125 characters, essentially. So they did not comment on the matter. I think it definitely harms Louisville's chances going forward. They needed Jones to beat Miami at home, make no mistake about it. And you know Pitino knows that they are a better team with him than without him on the court. But, you know, he's just screwed up too often to get any more chances. And so now we look at Louisville, and Terry Rozier, Montrezl Harrell are their best players. Wayne Blackshear needs to play better. But this could very well end up being a season where the Cardinals perhaps sputter to a 6 seed, maybe a 7 seed, depending on how well they play without him or don't, and then don't even flirt with the second weekend of the tournament.
Yeah, Sam, I want to get to you in a second about, you know, what this means for Louisville going forward. But I will say, after talking to a handful of people last night, this was very clearly the last straw. So, like, if you're looking for some, you know, gun charge that's going to come out later today, that's not going to happen. It wasn't what happened. Again, this is just what I'm told. Isn't something that, independent of everything else, would be cause for dismissal. But it was basically like, all right, we're tired of dealing with this stuff. It's one thing after another with you. And so, like, okay, now you're back on the team. You're going to play, but nothing else. No, whatever can cause drama in your life, like, stay away from it for the next month. Like, if every time you go out, because you're a hothead, you end up in some sort of situation, don't go out anymore. If every time you're around this girl, there's some sort of drama because you're both young and silly, don't be around that girl anymore. Like, whatever's causing problems, stop it, or else. And then, like, I'm told Saturday night he was out, and, you know, it was nothing big, but, like, what are you doing? You know, like, we're not dealing with this. We just talked to you about this. And so one person put it to me this way. They gave him 9 lives, and they just they made it very clear to him he doesn't get a 10th, and it almost went out, you know, in one ear and out the other. And so it's just, you know, disappointing for all the reasons we talked about on an earlier podcast. I mean, this is a kid who grew up in among the roughest parts of Memphis. He's from the Orange Mound community, which is, I mean, just Google it. It's a tough place, and kids who are born into that community, they had the odds stacked against them, like, you know, from birth. They are unlikely to make it out of there for a variety of reasons. And, you know, he made it out. He spent 2 years living on the beach playing basketball, being a National Junior College Player of the Year. He was the starting point guard at Louisville for 2 years. I mean, he was out. It wasn't like, man, I hope I can make it out. He made it out, and then he, you know, he couldn't hold on to it. And there's some deep rooted issues there, you know, anger stuff, temper stuff that, you know, at least reportedly now he's going to try to get addressed. But I just hate to see it. I'm not trying to tell you he's an angel. He's not an angel, but to know where he came from and to know that he's one of the few who made it out. And now I don't know what his future is. It's sad on some level. I wish this story would have had a different ending, but it doesn't, like, it's,
yeah, and he's a senior, by the way. So there is,
well, that's the other thing. Yeah. Like I had a bunch of,
there's no transfer thing happening here where he ends up at a different school. Like he's done playing college basketball.
And honestly, like at first I had like a bunch of Memphis fans tweeting at me, like, can he come back home? Like he's done. Like he played 2 years at JUCO last year. And then he's in February of his senior season. There is no eligibility left. And I wonder if this is going to be a little bit of a wake up call for him. And Sam, maybe you could speak to this. Because he has forever had issues, like forever had issues. Like, you know, my buddy Keith Easterwood, who's a longtime AAU coach in Memphis, used to coach Chris when he was a kid. And like, you know, it was like a fist fight every other game. Like Chris Jones just fighting everybody. Like you take the ball from him, he wants to fight you. You say something to him, he's going to hit you. Like he's that kind of kid, has always been. And so he's always had those issues. Then he had academic issues. But my point is, he was the type of kid when he was 13 years old that you would just throw off the team and be done with, except he was so damn good. So you're like, you're there because maybe you need him. And then he had academic issues to the extent of 99% of the kids from his community who have academic issues, nobody cares. Their parents don't even care for the most part. And so like, nobody's there to try to help you. Nobody cares. But there was always somebody there to try to help him because he might be able to, you know, help you win a basketball game. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, he can't qualify out of high school. So, you know, again, most people wouldn't care about him, but he was talented. So Steve Forbes and Jason Shea and Brooke Savage, like they all worked like crazy to help him get eligible to at least, you know, A, get to junior college, and then B, get out of junior college so he could go to Division I school. And for the first time in his life, I guess this is my point, he's not of great value to anybody. Like, mm-hmm. He can't help anybody anymore. Like, you know, some D-League team. But, like, he, for the first time in his life, he lacks real value on the basketball court. He no longer has college eligibility. He's no longer going to help you win a junior college title. He's no longer going to be the starting point guard for an ACC school. And I'm afraid that he probably hasn't quite grasped that yet. That his entire life, when he's run into issues like this, there's always been somebody to swoop in and try to save him because he benefited them theoretically. He benefits nobody anymore, really, and that's that could be a rude awakening. Sam, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I think that mostly you're right. Like it just sucks generally, and it seems like he's kind of self-aware of like what his problems are at this point, because he's going to seek out John Lucas and his anger management stuff, like that camp idea. What I don't know exactly what goes on there, but he's going to seek out help for his anger issues. And I watched like a video that I believe Jeff Greer took from the Courier Journal after their win over Miami this weekend, and they were asking him, like, you know, how much have you matured? And he was like, yeah, like he was totally self-aware of the fact that he had always been this kid that, you know, would have thrown off the team when he was 13 if he wasn't so good. And like, he used to fight every game, he said. Like, and he said he's doing a lot better at keeping his emotions in check. You know, it's just, the question is, can his game improve enough to where he can be of value to someone? And you, like, the skill is not in question. Chris Jones could play professionally somewhere. Like, if he really, really wanted to get his anger in check, and if he can get his anger in check, he will find a place to play. There's not any issue there. Like, be it in Europe, be it in the D-League, there are a few players who can combine his defensive skill, the ability to pressure the ball like crazy, and his ability to get into the teeth of the defense and create something. It's more just harnessing that, not overusing and overutilizing his skills and doing too much on the floor necessarily, because that was his problem this year. That's why he was the butt of all of the ridicule early in the year. He was taking like 15 shots a game and none of them were efficient shots. So if he can improve his basketball intelligence and try and, you know, kind of figure out a way to be more efficient on the floor. He has incredible skill to harness, and he will play professionally somewhere. It's just he needs to get that under control, and I really hope he does, because like you said, like I don't want him to go back to, you know, Memphis, where apparently very few kids make that out of.
Yeah, well, like, I don't want to overstate it, but like he is the stereotypical Memphis kid. Like he's the kid that could have been an extra in Hustle and Flow. You know what I'm saying? Like that's his life. And he's not the guy, he's not wired to come back to Memphis and not be a part of that. Like, even when he would come back here during the summers, like, I was always told, like, yeah, Chris Jones was hooping over in Orange Man. There's like, when the other guys come back to Memphis, like, they hoop at the Finch Center. You know, it's a very structured, you know, safe, normal, like, basketball playing environment. But it's not where he wanted to be. He wanted to be back in his old neighborhood. And so inevitably, but like, you have to understand, just because he's Chris Jones, like, starting point guard at Louisville, doesn't mean he ain't Chris Jones from Orange Mound. And so he's like, he'd be in Orange Mound. And like, I would hear all these stories about, you know, like, yeah, Chris was talking crazy, and like, you know, there's almost a fight. And the thing about, you know, that community, and again, I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush or overstate it. I'm just speaking, like, Google it if you don't believe me. But like, in that community, you know, like, an argument turns into like a you know, gunfire pretty quickly. And like, you know, senseless, stupid, you know, tough guy stuff turns into like, one person's dead and another person's doing life in prison. And it's frightening on some level that like, he could be, you know, he could very easily be in one of those situations where, you know, he ain't the type to try to necessarily move away and just leave it behind. Like he's a part of those streets. And so it's just, there's some scary options that are now on the table, and you just hope that, you know, one way or another, he figures it out. And like, honestly, he was in such a good situation with Louisville and Rick, because like, Rick is a pretty tolerant coach, as we all know. And then if you just walk the line the way you need to, like, then you've got Rick Pitino in your corner for the rest of your life. That ain't like, Rick Pitino's the dude who can just like pick up a phone call and get you a job. You know, like, he's a pretty powerful guy. And to blow all of that is just, it just makes me sick. But,
yeah, it really sucks.
Yeah. It just sucks. I hope it works out. I'm not as optimistic as I'd like to be, but I hope,
like, seriously, Belgium would be a pretty good option for him.
Anywhere except here. That's my point. Like, you know, when you grow up in a community where, and I'm not pinning all of his anger issues on this, because I don't think you could, because there are plenty of people who come out of Orange Mound who are like perfectly like, you know, reasonable contributors to society. Again, I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but when you grow up in a community where sometimes, you know, not being a bitch is more valued than like anything, it can really cause a lot of issues, because on one hand, it's a Hall of Fame coach trying to get you to be the right type of player and the right type of person. On the other hand, it could be easily perceived as, I'm not going to let this man tell me what to do. You know what I'm saying? And that trickles down to everything. And that's how these senseless, you know, like playground moments that I've heard were very close to escalating at certain points over the past, you know, 4 years of him coming back home every once in a while. It's like, you know, nobody's going to let Chris Jones go at them. And then Chris Jones ain't going to let anybody go back at him. And the next thing you know, like, we're ready to throw hands. And like, yo, you're an ACC point guard. Why are you almost fighting at a playground in Orange Mound, like, in the summer? Like, what are you doing? And so I just, yeah, you know, again, it's unfortunate. I think we've said everything you could possibly say about it. It's just an unfortunate situation. And I hope that John Lucas is able to get through to him on some level, and they're able to address all of these issues. And we look up in 5 years and you know, he's making a good salary playing basketball somewhere. Let's move on. Tom Izzo is at it again, 4 straight wins. Michigan State's now 19-8 overall, 10-4 in the Big Ten. They now have 3 top 50 RPI wins, just 2 losses outside of the top 50, although one of them is to Texas Southern. Either way, the resume is almost like top 25 good. It's definitely at large good. Norlander, should we feel a little silly for even questioning Tom Izzo a little?
Maybe a little bit. They're going to be an interesting seeded team. You know, they've got two roadies left that they can lose. They play at Wisconsin this weekend, and then they finish their season at Indiana. I think they'll drop both of those. I don't expect them to win the Big Ten tournament. So the Texas Southern one, which was a home loss, to me, that's still worth an entire seed line, if not two. So there'll be I think Michigan State might end up being a trendy Sweet 16 type of team, given their seed overall. I mean, I would expect them. They're 19-8. Yes, they've had a nice little win streak here. And most importantly, it has come with 3-4 on the road. And, you know, the Michigan win, you know, Michigan is down. But then again, you know, they took out Sam's Buckeyes on Sunday, which was kind of surprising how that came together.
Sam, what happened there? That game was surprised. I tweeted out the online link to be a good team player for CBSSports.com. Mm-hmm. Went downstairs to check on, like, you know, just everybody who lives in my house and make sure they're okay. Came back upstairs and it's like 47-1.
Yeah,
no.
The game was over from the very beginning.
Yeah, it's pretty typical for Ohio State this year. They've really, really struggled to open games. Look at, I want to say, both the Iowa games, the Louisville game, the North Carolina game. On the road or in, like, a neutral environment, they're awful to start games. I don't know what it is. Like, they've tried to put Jayshon Tate in the starting lineup instead of Mark Loving. That, like, even before Loving was suspended, they tried to do that to, like, insert energy. Like, they just open games really, really poorly and get way behind the eight ball, and they struggle from there. So,
well, in regard,
they need to fix that.
Yeah, and it was a bad showing. Ohio State's resume is definitely filled with holes. But the Big Ten had a lot of interesting action this week. I mean, Michigan State and Maryland and Purdue are all tied for second. Illinois, who I've never thought was going to make the tournament, you know, they can still do it, but losing two in a row and dropping the home game to Michigan State on Sunday, I think was something of a death knell there, because I just don't think they're going to get enough good wins the rest of the way to qualify for the tournament. So in my opinion, Illinois probably pushed themselves out. Ohio State's dropped two straight. They are road games. They should be able to rebound here, I know, at home. But their schedule away from home has not been good. So I think we actually might have a situation where Ohio State's seeded even worse than Michigan State. I mean, they're certainly on pace to do that. But I don't know. It's going to be very much a matchup situation with the Buckeyes in terms of who they get in the bracket, because I could see them getting a 7 and very well being capable of knocking out a 2 if it was the right 2 seed in that particular bracket. So if they don't really do damage in the Big Ten tournament, they could very well be looking at a seed where people might expect them to be a 4 or 5, or they get a 7 type of slot.
But with back to Michigan State for a minute, I mean, I only go to 26 in the top 25-1, obviously. So I got VCU at 26 now, and I think I would have San Diego State at 27. Like, that was sort of next. But, like, I don't think you could get Michigan State out of the top 30. Like, I was looking at, you know, all the sort of
– yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've turned into – and keep in mind, that's, you know, they top 30 isn't necessarily good when you were preseason top 20. But top 30, given that – you know, they lost to Texas Southern earlier in the year. Like, Tom's got it turned around a little bit, and they're playing better right now. And when you look at the schedule, you know, I think even if they just finish 2-2 in the Final Four, like, they're probably fine. That means a win over Minnesota on Thursday, lose at Wisconsin, whatever. Everybody's doing that. Then I'd beat Purdue at home. I wouldn't want to take a home loss to Purdue, so knock that one out, and then go lose at Indiana. And then at that point, I think you finish 21-10 overall, 12-6 in the Big Ten heading into the Big Ten tournament. I think that's probably good enough almost regardless of what happens in the Big Ten tournament. Sam, do you see it that way?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That's basically what I wrote in Night Court last night. Right. I think that they're fine as long as they don't, like, hemorrhage these games at the end. And I think there's a distinct possibility they do, because getting Purdue at home right now with the way Purdue is playing is going to be a tough game. AJ Hammonds has been terrific this year. You know, Vince Edwards is really, really good. They're playing probably better than anyone in the Big Ten outside of Wisconsin right now, period. So I think that they could lose that game. But if they can, you know, win it in the Breslin Center like they should, then I think they'll be fine. Even going into the Big Ten tournament, they could drop their first game, and I think they'll be fine.
And Purdue, and Purdue projects basically the same way. I mean, they're sitting here at 18-9 overall, 10-4 in the Big Ten. Four games left, two on the road, two at home. Win the home games, lose the road games. You still finish 20-11, 12-6. That's good enough, right?
Probably, although they have a weird...
Yeah, their resume's bad in the early...
They've got a very weird resume. So, in my opinion, if you're Purdue, win two in the Big Ten tournament and you're safe. Obviously, no one team is in a vacuum. It depends on stuff around you. But, yeah, they have a freaky resume. The Big Ten in general, just the teams they have, the seeding they're going to get, I think it's going to be wonky compared to most ever other leagues, and especially in typical years here. But Purdue is... Well, like, for example, right now Purdue is 49 in KenPom, and I would put their standing right now better in terms of a prospectus than Texas, which is 21st.
Yeah.
But Texas is just falling off a cliff here. I mean, they've dropped their past two. They had a four-game losing streak earlier this season. They have their next two at West Virginia and at Kansas. You know, they fell at home to Iowa State. It wasn't a great loss in terms of how they looked. So we could have a situation here where the Longhorns, who, you know, I said, you know, going into that Kentucky game, I thought they had a decent chance back in December of keeping it interesting and maybe beating Kentucky. And I liked them as sort of a Final Four dark horse. I mean, as of right now, I'll say Texas does not make the tournament. I think they're going to be a one seed in the NIT.
I can't argue against it right now. I mean, their resume still isn't as bad as some people try to make it out to be. They're lacking wins, but they don't have all these crazy bad losses. You know,
they don't. I know, but they're going to be 17-12. I don't think they're going to win their next two. So they're going to be 6-10 in the league.
That's tough.
They get Baylor at home, which they have to win. They finish with K-State. They should win that. But like, if you go 2-0 in the Big 12 tournament, maybe it's enough. I don't know. I suddenly have a bad feeling with Texas, and I wrote this in Night Court over the weekend, but Texas and UCLA, which dropped two straight, they had two road games. They lost to the Arizona schools. Now UCLA gets three straight homers. They play Washington Wednesday. I know Sam will be at that game. Then they get Washington State and USC. If you're UCLA, you can't afford to lose any of those games. And they're, you know, UCLA right now is a top 50 KenPom team. I'm not sure where they are in the RPI, but regardless, I think those are the two, you know, kind of bigger programs that at one point looked decently like they'd get into the tournament. Texas more than UCLA, that are certainly wobbly at this point.
Back to Texas for a second, to my point, their worst loss is to Stanford. Nine of their 10 losses are to teams that are currently ranked in the Associated Press top 25. Now, they lack wins. They've only got one top 25 win. That's a home win over West Virginia. Their next best wins, probably Iowa, Connecticut, California. So they only have one top 50 win, four top 100 wins, but they have no bad losses, although they are trending the wrong way. So I don't think their 17-10 record isn't as bad as it might seem, because like it ain't like they're taking a bunch of weird losses. Almost all their losses are to teams that, if not all their losses, are to teams that are going to be in the NCAA tournament. But at some point, we know this. You got to beat somebody, and it's February 23rd, and they really haven't beaten. They've almost beaten nobody all year long. So I'm not out. And then combine that fact with the fact that it seems like they're trending the wrong direction.
Here's the thing with Texas. What makes them different from NC State? I think NC State might have a better resume than they do at this point. I mean, you can at least point to wins over Duke and Louisville for NC State that are like legitimate marquee wins. And yeah, like NC State lost that game to Wofford, and I want to say they dropped one to Clemson. But at the same time, like, I think I would trust NC State to go out and beat a tougher team more than I would trust Texas right now.
Yeah, the difference would be they got better wins, clearly. They got a Duke win, a Louisville win, a Pitt win, a Boise State win. That's four top 50 wins. They have one, two, three, four, five losses outside of the top 50, though. One outside of the top 125. That's the Wake Forest loss. So it just depends on what...
to Wake Forest too.
Yeah, it just depends on what you value. You know, do you value wins, or do you value, you know, no bad losses? So, you know, that can be interpreted a lot of different ways. Either way, at least specifically to Texas, you know, disappointing. I mean, the preseason top 10 team, people thought that they were, and the roster is good enough. The roster is better than what, you know, than what Rick Barnes has been able to do with it. That seems undeniable. Back to Purdue for a second. I find this whole situation interesting, because the truth is, I think these are all, I think everything I'm about to say is true. Correct me if any of this is wrong. Matt Painter is like a good basketball coach. Does anybody in basketball really disagree with that?
Right. No, he is.
Okay. Okay. So like Matt Painter's good and he's a Purdue guy. And I don't think if you made a move, you were ever going to be able to hire somebody better than Matt Painter. You might hire somebody who, you know, does good things, just as likely or more likely you hire somebody who, you know, runs it into the ground, but whatever. And yet, if this season would have gone poorly, which is the way it was kind of projected to go, they might have made a move on him because he made the tournament in 2012, but then losing record in 2013, losing record last year, and if this one would have gone the wrong way, probably, you know, that's three straight NCAA tournament misses, and you just wonder if they would have been anxious to make a move, just change for the sake of change. And so it's sort of interesting to watch this go because now all of that seems moot. But I'm always fascinated by these situations where the fan base gets antsy with a coach when it is record-wise not going the way you want it to go and not probably not going the way it should go. But you also in the back of your mind know we probably can't hire a better coach than the one we already got. Like, should we just hang in there and see if he can, you know, give him 4 years, 5 years to turn it around? Because, like, if we make a move now, like, are we really going to be able to hire somebody better than the guy we got to pay millions of dollars to go away? And I think that that's sometimes been the case at Ole Miss with Andy Kennedy. Like, the fans get frustrated. And I'm like, who are you going to hire better than Andy Kennedy? Like, in the past 3 years, I saw somebody tweet this over the weekend. In terms of SEC wins, it's one John Calipari, two Billy Donovan, and three Andy Kennedy, right? So, but then Ole Miss fans are like, we should be going to the tournament more. And I'm like, really? Like, what makes you think
should
be?
They are, by the way.
Oh, they're going to be fine.
They're probably going to make it.
Yeah,
I mean, if they don't totally fall on their face, they've got some bad losses. They need to still – I know we're kind of like hitting different directions here, but if they can just – like play 500 the rest of the way, that's going to get them to about 23 wins, including SEC tournament play. I think they'll make it.
Yeah, I guess my point is, let's just focus strictly on Painter. Evan, do I have this peg right? Like, how do you view the idea of, hey, this is Purdue basketball, and you shouldn't be going 16-18 in 1 year, 15-17 the next, and then have another bad year. Then we got to make a change. With how do you balance that very reasonable opinion with, hey, but you can't get better than Matt Painter. And like, I know it's not going well, but don't you trust Matt Painter to get it back on track more than you trust whoever it is you could possibly hire? Like, how do you balance those things?
So, yeah, like, I think it's really, really, really difficult to do that considering he made the tournament 6 years in a row.
I know. That's my thing. You can't find somebody better than Matt Painter, but it hasn't been going well. I actually think
they might be able to find someone better than Matt Painter, but I think it's going to be a highly variable thing where maybe you do find someone better than Matt Painter, and there's always that like 5-10% chance that that guy is going to be this excellent basketball coach. Like if you could go out and hire someone like Greg Marshall, you know what I mean?
Well,
I was going to say, I don't think he would take the Purdue job.
No,
but
I can tell you he wouldn't.
If you can go out and hire someone like of that caliber, and that guy maybe ends up being better than Matt Painter. But Matt Painter's been really good.
I know.
He's been excellent for your program. Like, he's a Purdue guy. I don't know what more you could want. And I think it's a really interesting discussion, especially in the context of, I remember earlier this year we were talking about, you know, sometimes coaches, if they're there for 8 years, that's kind of the turnover if you're not winning. So this is about Painter. I want to say it's his ninth year, maybe.
This is 10th.
And it's his 10th, yeah.
10th year.
So I wonder how he fits into all of that, because maybe Purdue is stagnating a little bit, but like you said, like we both said, like, he's better for this job than anyone could be.
Right. And so again, so I think this, I think this season, the way it's going, just to make sure we're being clear here, all of this becomes a moot point. Like, he's going to make the NCAA tournament and everything's cool. But I was just sort of interested in the hypothetical of, if he didn't make it again this year for the third straight year, what do you do? Because on one hand, you could just, you know, bottom line it very simply. Hey, program's going the wrong direction, missed the tournament three straight years. We don't allow that at Purdue. Time to make a change. On the other hand, you go, you got a Purdue guy who people in the industry respect, and who has gone to six straight NCAA tournaments before, should you be more patient than you otherwise would be, knowing that you've got a quality basketball coach, as opposed to trying to roll the firing one of your own and trying to roll the dice to maybe hire somebody who could hopefully have, like, could the, Purdue's next head coach, whoever it is, go to six tournaments in 10 years? Like, you know, like, we'll see, right? But I'm just sort of always fascinated by that sort of conversation. Like, what do you do?
Honestly, I feel like Purdue is not an easy job either.
No, it's
like
not an
you
easy
have Indiana job. right in the backyard. I mean, there are all these Big Ten schools that are bigger than you right there, and it's tough to get good players there. And Matt Painter's done it. He had that great recruiting class with Robbie Hummel and Juwan Johnson, and Etwan Moore. He brought AJ Hammonds in, who was a terrific recruit. He has a lot of really good freshmen and sophomores right now that are contributing and should be able to lead them back to the NCAA tournament next year.
To your point about the job, like, I always think this is interesting. Yeah, okay, how good is the Purdue job? Well, it's Purdue basketball and Gene Katie and Big Dog. Okay. No. Let's talk about it right now.
Yeah.
In the Big Ten, Wisconsin better.
Yeah.
Michigan State better job.
Yeah, we're talking job, not program.
Yeah, job. If you laid all these jobs on the table and told a guy, told a 40-year-old head coach, you can take any of them you want.
And it's equal money, I would
guess. And the money's all the same.
Yes.
Wisconsin's a better job.
Yes.
Michigan State's a better job.
Yes.
Maryland's a better job.
Yes.
Indiana's a better job.
Yes.
Ohio State's a better job.
Yes.
Michigan's a better job.
Yes.
Yep. Illinois a better job?
I think no.
That's
no?
where we're getting.
Oh, gray. I think clearly.
But well, with the way that Chicago basketball has developed recently, I think that it might
yeah,
be.
Yeah, but Illinois, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I
at
would
least
say
Illinois, you don't have to play second fiddle in your own state or third fiddle in your own state or anything like that.
Yeah, but yeah, I understand that. But Illinois is also not by any means through multiple coaches been able to hook up through the Chicago connection. So I understand what you're saying. I would say that's where Purdue and Illinois are like right there. But
I would agree with that too.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Minnesota. What about Minnesota?
No,
I don't think so.
Okay, fine then. Okay, here's what we know for sure: Wisconsin, Michigan State, Maryland, Indiana, Ohio State, Michigan. At best, it's seventh in the Big Ten. At best, it's a middle of the pack Big Ten program or Big Ten job. So like. You know, who could you really hire?
What about Iowa, too?
Well, that's the other thing, Iowa. Like, I think you could argue Purdue, Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota.
And Nebraska, probably, with all of their – they just built, like, so many great amenities around
that.
But it's – they're going to get recruits there. I mean, it's not just, like, Tim Miles that's going to get recruits there. That entire area, like everything they've built up, they're going to get recruits there. Right. That's a pretty equal job, I think.
Yeah. So, like, anyway, my point is that, you know, Purdue is probably a middle of the pack Big Ten job. So, like, the idea that you could go out and hire whoever you think you can hire, probably not true. You're probably hiring a mid-major coach or an assistant. And either way, I'm glad that we don't have to discuss this in March because, again, it looks like Matt Painter's got to take this thing back in the NCAA tournament and everything's cool. I was just sort of always fascinated by the hypothetical of what do you do if you're Purdue or what should you do if you're Purdue. Let's switch gears. Kyle Wilcher, why is he not in the National Player of the Year conversation? Should he be? He's averaging 17.6 rebounds, 2 assists, for a team that will probably be a one seed in the NCAA tournament, shooting 54% from the field, 47% from three, 81% from the free throw line, did a 45-point game last Thursday night. Why, like, doesn't he check most of the boxes that Kaminsky and Okafor check in terms of being a really good statistical player on a nationally relevant team?
Right, I think, and Sam can take some of this too, but my answers to that would be there was an expectation that it would be Pangos, not Wilcher, and so we're slow to react to it. I would think you have to put Wilcher in a top 10, closer to, you know, near the top 5, and he is, you know, he's been superb, man. I mean, there was certainly an aspect to this where he was expected to contribute in ways similar but not equal to Kelly Olynyk from 2 years ago on that one seeded Gonzaga team. He has not been what Olynyk was, but he's been really good overall. And yes, he is worthy of being top 10 player of the year consideration at this point. And yes, Gonzaga is going to be a one seed because they came back from 17 down Woo. At St. Mary's when everyone, my mentions were already starting to flare up, okay, about Gonzaga losing. People are so eager to watch this team lose. It's Wichita State all over again.
Yep.
But they get the win. They're not going to lose again. They're going to be one seed. Wiltshire's top 10 player of the year consideration.
I think he's top five, and I would put him first team All-American right now. What's wrong with this All-American team? Jaren Grant, D'Angelo Russell, Wiltshire, Kaminsky, Okafor. Is that fine, Sam?
I would go DeLon Wright over Wiltshire, but I think that Wiltshire is second team.
Why not DeLon Wright over D'Angelo Russell?
Because I am a homer.
I know.
No, I would go Russell over Wright and Wiltshire just because he's like appointment viewing now in a way. Like you have to watch him to kind of appreciate him. And yeah, the statistics are great and he's carrying that team to a tournament bid that has no business being near a tournament bid, I think. So, you know, I would probably slide Russell over Wiltshire because I think that he is just generally, you know, better offensive player than Kyle Wiltshire. He's a better.
What? I just gave you the number.
I don't think he's a better shooter, but
no,
I think he's a better offensive player.
I hear what you're saying. I agree.
He's a better point guard. I mean, he gets everyone involved.
He's a better point guard than Kyle Wiltshire?
Well, he's a terrific passer. I mean, he's a better point guard than Kyle Wiltshire.
He's a point guard. Hey, Kyle Wiltshire's a better small forward than D'Angelo Russell.
I don't know if that's true.
No, we've talked about, you know, and I don't mean just us. Everybody's talked about Okafor, obviously. Kaminsky, obviously. Russell has entered that conversation. Jaren Grant's been a part of that conversation. Yeah. Wiltshire's never really been. And when you sort of take a look at what he's doing and the team that he's doing it for, I think he's got player of the year stuff. I don't think he'll get there because I think ultimately it's going to be an Okafor-Kaminsky conversation. But he can reasonably be placed in that conversation. That's all. That was my only point.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's in that like same area that like DeLon Wright, Willie Cauley-Stein, and I guess he are in that. Like they're probably a step below the top four in my opinion, but they're right there. I mean, they're probably going to be in the battle for first team All-American. They'll definitely be second team All-Americans. That's just a terrific accomplishment for Wiltshire, who, you know, could be a member of this Kentucky team right now that is 27-0 and not looking like it's going to slow down anytime soon.
Go ahead.
I mean, it worked out great for everyone involved. Like I talked to him earlier this year, I wrote about him, and I don't think he would have improved his game the way he has at Gonzaga at Kentucky, because they really focused in on improving his body, improving his post work, improving his play in general in a way that I don't know that Kentucky would have, because there wouldn't have been as much of a focus on him.
I sort of like the idea that, you know, in this year where the best team in college basketball is consists of a bunch of dudes who bought in and sacrificed, you know, individual numbers and playing time to try to do something great. There's this other team on the other side of the country that's also probably going to be a one seed, led by a guy who said, you know what, that's fine, but that ain't really for me. You know, like I'd rather play 35 minutes a game, and I'd rather get shots, and I'd rather be more of a focal point than one of 10 dudes. And I don't know if he made that this decision with all of those things in mind, but I do think it's interesting that arguably two of the top, you know, three or four or five teams in America, you know, one consists of all these dudes who bought in and sacrificed all these things, and another one's led by a guy who was a part of that, but then decided he didn't want to be a part of that in that way. At least on some level, he decided that. And like you said, it's worked out brilliantly for everybody. Like, I don't think Kentucky fans are, I think they seem to be Kyle Wiltshire fans. Like, they understand why he left. And, you know, it's worked out for Wiltshire. It's worked out for Kentucky. I just think that's sort of a neat little connected bunch of dots story.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think I've heard anyone, like any Kentucky person, complain about Wiltshire. He says he's totally supportive of Kentucky. I know for a fact, like whenever Alex Poythress injured his knee, like he sent a note over to Poythress. He sent like a bunch of like social media messages over. They're all like still kind of close, I guess, that recruiting class. So yeah, I think that it's just a really, really good situation. It's a really good story. And I don't think it could have worked out better for either party.
I'll tell you when it'll might turn on him a little bit, when he's a first team All-American and no Kentucky players are, and the Kentucky fans point out over and over again how their ninth best player, how is their ninth best player a first team All-American?
That's probably going to happen at some point. But yes. So let's go on the good part of this boat right now. Let's just keep let's keep pulling.
Yeah. No. Last thing before we get out of here, Matt, I want to ask you about this. So Kansas is at Kansas State tonight. They're 11-3 in the league. They got a one game lead over Iowa State. Tell me if I've got this right. The Jayhawks never lose at home, or at least they rarely lose at home. I don't think they've lost a Big 12 home game in more than 2 years on the calendar. So if they win tonight at Kansas State, they're then 12-3 in the Big 12. They only have one road game left. And even if they were to lose that road game, I think it's at Oklahoma, long as they win their home games, which I've already established they always do, they're going to finish no worse than 14-4 in the league, which will be good enough for a share of the Big 12 title, even if Iowa State wins out. So I guess what I'm asking, Kansas, they can basically secure an 11th straight Big 12 title tonight, right? I got this pegged correctly, right?
Yeah, that's going to happen because they're going to win. We're going with the Monday Norlander prediction special here.
That was my pick. Before you do this, that was my pick of the night in the viewer's guide.
All righty. Well, yes. Yeah, they're going to do it. They're going to lock it up. And then we're going to eventually hit a conversation where if they are able to win the Big 12 tournament, you're going to have Kansas having won the Big 12, by far the best league, you know, by every statistical measure, basically. And if they win the Big 12 tournament, then you're going to have people asking why they shouldn't be a one seed. That'll be a legit conversation if they don't lose again, but I think they're going to lose again. But yes, they're going to lock it up. And in my opinion, that's a decent game. But the most interesting game of the night, GP, is Xavier St. John's, only because St. John's beat Xavier. St. John's is another team with a weird profile. But if they win tonight, and St. John's does have that game at home, they'll have swept Xavier. And I don't know if both teams are going to make the tournament. And if that's the case, St. John's is going to have a trump card over X in that regard. So it's one they need to win because St. John's still has a road game against Nova left. So I expect Kansas to win, lock up the Big 12 yet again. Bill Self is ridiculous. But really keeping an eye on Xavier St. John's, just because if they split, I'd love to see them play again in the Big East tournament.
All right, let's get out of here. Remember, you can subscribe to the Iowa College Basketball Podcast over at iTunes. Quickest way to get your hands on the latest edition. So make sure you go do that. And either way, I will talk to you again on Wednesday. Take care.